Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, happy Friday. Hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on October 4th. Coming up today, we'll hear from a man in Deal locked in a battle with a broadband company who he's accused of installing equipment on his property. We'll also hear from the Gillingham manager as they travel to Crewe Alexandra for their next League 2 match. But first, taking a look at our top story today. A school in Medway has defended its haircut policy after a pupil was taken out of class when their hair was deemed too short. Joe Crossley has been following this one for the Kent Online Podcast. He's with me now. Joe, thank you for your time. First of all, just so we can get a better understanding of what the problem might be, what is the school's haircut guidelines?
Good morning, Kate. Yes, so the school's policy states no extreme haircuts, e.g. skin fades, graphic lines, and it must be a minimum of a grade one cut or a number one, as some people will know it by. And this is at the senior leadership's team's discretion. The school say that this allows for quality and focus among its students. Of course, we've heard from one parent whose son was put into a behaviour unit because of having the skin fade haircut, that this is a ridiculous measure.
And why was the student taken out of class?
So Liam had his haircut on Saturday the 21st of September, but was pulled out of class 3 days later on Wednesday, when teachers basically said that he had broken the guidelines because his hair was too short. He was then placed in a behavioural unit because he had broken the school's rules, but was pulled out by his mum. The school again say that he had broken the rules and that his haircut did not meet its uniform guidelines.
Now, his stepfather has been pretty open with sharing his anger about this. What's he been saying?
So Liam's stepdad has called the school's decision to pull his son, who is in his last year of GCSEs, so year 11, ridiculous and unnecessary. He says that something needs to be done to change what the school is doing, as his son shouldn't be missing out on teaching time. He also says that it's not like he has a mohawk or massively long braids or blue hair. He says it's a sensible haircut that pretty much every teenager in Medway has. He also says that professionals have similar haircuts and it wouldn't stop them getting a job. He also mentions the medical problems that Liam has. He has severe eczema, and he says that the haircut actually helps him, his head cool during the autumn and summer months, because the heat from wearing a blazer and shirt and coat makes him sweat and irritates his skin. And he actually says that the school knows this, and they've provided all medical details about this to the school.
And what's been the school's response?
The school's response to the comments made by Liam's dad, Barry Sandman, were put in a statement which Kent Online has received. It said that Shrewd Academy is committed to maintaining a positive and inclusive learning environment where high standards of behaviour and appearance are upheld. It adds, these standards are consistently applied across the academy to ensure all students are prepared for learning and that our school community remains focused on achieving the best possible outcomes for every child. It says it is aware of the concerns raised by the parent, and it is looking to talk to them in a meeting. The academy has also said that it has a clear and well-established dress code, including guidelines on appropriate hairstyles, which it communicates to parents and students at the beginning of each academic year. And it says these guidelines are in place to promote a sense of equality and focus across the academy. It says, again, it is in communication with the parent and has offered a meeting to discuss their concerns in more detail.
Thanks so much, Joe. According to a poll at Kent Online, most readers agree that skin fade haircuts are a smart style and they should not be banned from the classroom. You can have your say by clicking on the story on our website.
Kent Online News.
A Maidstone man who strangled a woman several times during a violent assault has been jailed. Ashley Southgate carried out the attack in February and set upon his victim again 2 days later. The 57-year-old has been locked up for 15 months. Inquests are due to open into the deaths of a Kent couple when a luxury yacht sank off the coast of Sicily. Judy and Jonathan Bloomer from Sevenoaks were among seven people who died following a storm in August. A hearing is being held in Ipswich. A Sheppey holiday park boss has been jailed following an attack in Essex. Bernard Saunders left a man with serious injuries after hitting him with an axe handle in Stanford La Hope back in March. The 30-year-old, who recently invested millions in Eden Leisure Park in East Church, admitted GBH and has been locked up for 28 months. Two suspected drug dealers have been arrested after what's thought to be Class A drugs were found at a house in Margate. Officers had visited the property in Addington Street and also discovered cannabis, scales, money and mobile phones. A 37-year-old man and woman, who's 44, are in custody. A Maidstone man has been jailed after threatening police officers before attacking them with a corrosive powder. Police were called to Charlie Ryder's Knight Rider Street property following reports he'd been smashing it up. While being arrested, he threw the powder, which turned out to be drain unblocker. The 26-year-old was already on bail for a violent mugging. He's been locked up for 3 years and 3 months. A person's been injured after a crash involving a tractor and a mobility scooter in Faversham. Emergency crews were called to Bising Wood Road near Sainsbury's yesterday afternoon. The collision caused long delays in the area. An Ashford man who was banned from the high street for 3 years has returned to the town centre just 3 days later. The 55-year-old had been given a court order after ignoring several warnings about excessive alcohol in public, but he turned up in the bandstand area last month. He was ordered to pay more than £350, but didn't have to pay due to the amount of time he'd spent in custody before appearing in court. A man has been flown to a London hospital after a crash involving a car and a motorbike in Maidstone. It happened on Sutton Road near the junction with Willington Street yesterday evening. A man in his 20s was injured.
Kent Online News.
A homeowner in Deal is in a row with Virgin Media over claims a broadband cabinet was built on his property without permission. Paul Skinner and his pregnant fiancée Gemma Parker say the equipment has been illegally installed on their land in Church Lane. He's been speaking to reporter Chantal Weller.
When we came home, fiancée and I found they were digging outside the property. They hadn't given any notification and they told my fiancée, who was pregnant, to climb over the pit they created to get in the house. Through a lot of research, we found out this section of land is actually part of private property owned by myself. It was an easement given when building the estate round the corner. So Virgin Media and Nexfibre have built on private property. Kent County Council has issued a permit for this, even though it's not their land to build on. And so far, no one is admitting fault and agreeing to remove it or work with me to a solution that will be beneficial to both parties.
So tell me a little bit about how this has affected you. Obviously, they arrived in July, and it's sort of still going on now for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it's still ongoing, and there was an altercation where the police had to be called out as the company that was installing it basically told me I was not allowed to do any work in my front garden, forbid me to be on my property, after which about 5 to 6 vans turned up for working on one small unit. More of an intimidation factor because no one was actually working. They were parked on private property around the corner as well.
Yeah, and tell me a bit about how that made you feel. You also mentioned that your fiancée was out at the time and you told her not to come home at that point.
Yeah, I was quite fearful for my fiancée as she was out being pregnant. I didn't want any stress to go on for her and the unborn child at this point. So I just asked her not to come back that day until they'd gone. For her safety. At that point I actually stayed in the house myself. I refused to come out as there were so many people here, literally just as I once said, the intimidation factor, it was beyond a joke. Police came out to try to liaise between both parties. It was after the police left, that's when multiple war vans turned up.
Yeah, and tell me about sort of where you're at the moment then. So your plan is you're not going to stop until...
No, I'm not going to stop this fight. Once again, it's large companies that feel that they are beyond the reach of the law and can do what they want, take what they want with no repercussions, and it's something that needs to be addressed. Government before have stated they won't allow things like this, yet it still occurs, and it is beyond a joke at this point.
Also said that you wanted to sort of raise that awareness so that it doesn't happen to anybody else.
Yes, because if this has happened to me, and there's so many of these units being placed around Deal at the moment, has this happened to someone else who doesn't know about their property boundaries at that point? I wasn't actually aware this was an easement until I researched into this. Luckily the previous owners were my parents and they were the one that created the easement in the first place, so I had a lot of information there. So I would say if anyone's got one of these been placed outside their property and they're not happy about it, research your deeds, look into it all, make sure that it's been put there legally, and if not, fight it.
Highways Authority Kent County Council says it is now investigating and stated it has not received an application for the works to take place, but that's being disputed by Virgin Media. After Mr. Skinner contacted Virgin about the works, bosses there say they're also looking into the complaint but insist the correct permissions were obtained. Nexfibre has also been contacted for a comment. There are calls for anyone with a spare room in Kent to consider becoming a foster carer. Figures from the National Fostering Group show 129 homes are urgently needed to meet an increase in the number of children entering care in the last 12 months. A survey found there are more than 15,000 extra rooms in the county. The Share the Spare campaign wants those households to get on board. The organisers of Kent's biggest Pride Festival say they're in shock after finding out it can't be held at its usual home next year. Canterbury Pride has been at Danejohn Gardens for the last 8 years, but council have now suspended all activities in the park for 2025 due to improvement works. The event coordinators say they're concerned about the decision and they're hoping to talk to local bosses about a possible solution. Now there's anger after it was discovered an abandoned charity shop in Maidstone was still packed with donations despite claims it had been cleared. Save the Children in Union Street has been closed for 4 years, leaving stock to rot inside. But bosses said all sellable items would be transferred to other sites. Although windows have been blacked out, there are still donations inside. A spokesperson says anything that remains will be rehomed, recycled or disposed. Head to Kent Online to see pictures of what's been left behind.
Kent Online News.
We should find out today if a new road tunnel linking Kent and Essex will finally be built. The Labor government has been making a decision on the future of the Lower Thames Crossing after winning the election. If approved, it would run from the east of Gravesend to Thurrock in a bid to ease congestion at the current Dartford Tunnel and Bridge. Dartford MP Jim Dixon has been speaking to local Democracy reporters Dan Essen and Simon Finlay.
Expected to come to a total cost of £9 billion. It's the most expensive planning application in history, and not a single brick has been placed, not a single spade has been in the ground. It's all been surveys and paperwork and bureaucracy and planning permission, and it's cost more than the economy of some small countries. Why is it that Britain just can't get things built?
Well, it's taken too long, and so you're absolutely right to say that it's now something like 15 years, and it was the last Labour government that actually decided that they needed to start to get plans in place for this additional crossing outside London. And I think a lot of the delay has been partly a very patient consultation and looking at a whole variety of routes to try and get the optimal route, which inconveniences the fewest numbers of people, protects the biodiversity and natural heritage of both north and south. But also I think we have a planning system which takes too long to process big infrastructure projects. And one of the things that the Labour government's particularly keen to do, and we see that in their consultation on the new national planning guidance, is to try and speed these things up. And it really shouldn't have taken as long as it has. But I'm pleased that it's now potentially a Labour government, having been in there at the beginning. We've now had a 14-year gap under the last government, that it'll be a Labour government that gives it the go-ahead. And identifies the right package to fund it.
Mm. Something else I wanted to ask about this is that obviously your neighbouring constituency Gravesham, where the Lower Thames Crossing will actually be, also has a Labour MP, Dr. Lauren Sullivan, of Gravesham Borough Council and Kent County Council as well. And as I understand it, her and her colleagues in Gravesham Labour are not as keen on the idea of Lower Thames Crossing, because they think it will basically bring the sort of traffic blight that Dartford has with the QE2 bridge to Gravesham. I mean, does that, is this an issue that you and your neighbouring MP have spoken about? Is this an issue of concern? Or do you think the government should say, well, a new Thames Crossing is in the national interest, so the concerns of local residents need to be overridden by that?
Well, I wouldn't want to speak for Lauren. She's a great neighbour of mine, and we both campaigned together during the general election. And actually, we share an office in the Houses of Parliament now, so we're very close buddies. She'll have her own view. Clearly, you have a different perspective where the crossing actually intersects with your own constituency. I'm sure she'll make those views known to you. But what I would say is there's a really big coalition come together in Kent. So the great majority of Kent Labour MPs, business, community organisations, nature organisations, perhaps surprisingly to some people who think it's not an ecologically sound project, but all those organisations have come together in a big coalition saying this really must happen. And Kent County Council as well, so it's great to be working cross-party with Kent, which is Tory-controlled, with me as a Labour MP. So this really cuts across geography, it cuts across politics, it cuts across cuts across sectors, because we really need to see this happen.
He's been on the latest episode of the Kent Politics podcast. At the time of recording today, the decision hadn't been made public. Head to Kent Online to see the latest. A newly opened Burger King in Kent has been given the lowest food hygiene rating out of any of the chain's branches across the country. The restaurant in Tunbridge Wells was criticised for using dirty and greasy equipment and handed a rating of 1 out of 5 stars. Council say the problems at the site in Mount Pleasant Road have been fixed. A re-inspection is due to be carried out before the end of December. Gogglebox star Giles Brandreth is going to be coming to Maidstone for this year's Litfest. The event's back for a second year to celebrate books, authors and storytelling. West Morling's Rosie Hewlett will also be talking about her book Medea.
I'm super excited to be involved, and again, it's so nice that it's just down the road. It feels, yeah, just like very local, which is lovely. And I think it's so important. It's wonderful to see everyone coming together to celebrate stories and authors, and also as an opportunity to like meet readers. And to, I think one of the best parts about books and about reading books and writing books is talking about them with people. You know, when you read a really good book, the first thing you want to do is talk to someone, and you force your friends to read it so you can have a discussion. I think it's horrible when you're the only one who's read a book and you can't talk to anyone about it. So I think that's why these festivals are so lovely, because it's just celebrating that love of reading and love of stories. And as an author, it's wonderful to, you know, be invited and to get to talk about our books, because we're obviously very proud of them. So it's a great thing.
Is it quite nerve-wracking to speak about your book? Because obviously it's a very personal thing to you. It's your passion. But to share it with everybody, how kind of nervous do you get about that? And do you like to hear the feedback, what people have had to say about it?
I mean, I love hearing the feedback when it's positive. But no, it's, I mean, yes, it's definitely scary putting a book out into the world, because it's so personal and it feels very vulnerable as an author, but it's also a wonderful thing to share it with people. I think there's a quote from Brandon Sanderson, who's a fantasy author, and he says, a book isn't finished until it's read. And I love that idea, because it's like the readers, as an author, you can put everything on the page, but it doesn't come alive until someone reads it. So it feels like completing the story when someone reads it, and that's really wonderful. So it's scary, but it's also a really nice thing, and it's lovely to get to share it with people. And I love Greek mythology. I've always loved it. So for me, getting to chat about Greek myth in general, and then also getting to chat about my versions of the myth, I could honestly talk all day. So I love the events. I love chatting about it. It's so much fun.
And did you always want to be an author? Was that always the aim?
Yes. I mean, ever since I was little, I was writing stories. My parents still have them all at home, of these little books I was writing when I could, literally as soon as I could write. But it was always just something that I loved to do. I don't think it was I want my career to be an author initially, because I liked writing stories, and that's what I did. And then as I got older, I think you hear a lot about becoming an author is such an unlikely career and such an unstable career. So I think that kind of put me off a bit. But then when I wrote my first book, Medusa, and self-published and got such a positive response, it sort of just got the ball rolling. And I suddenly realized, oh, wait, I could actually maybe do this because people want to read what I'm writing. And then when I wrote Medea and I got the publishing deal, it all just kind of took off. And now it's just been a dream come true, really.
It's quite a big step, isn't it, to self-publish? Was that quite nerve-wracking when you were going through that whole process?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't know what gave me the audacity to just be like, yep, I can self-publish, I'm good enough, because I'd never let anyone read my work. And then I went from no one reading it to everyone reading it. I think it was honestly lockdown madness, because I wrote it during the 2020 lockdown when I was on furlough. So it was quite a massive step for me as someone who didn't let anyone read their writing. But in a way, it was really good that I like just pushed myself off that ledge, because it wasn't until people read it that I realized, oh, maybe I actually can write, because people did like it. So it was really a sink or swim moment.
And then I guess there's even more pressure, because people want more from you. And obviously Medea is out at the moment. What is in the pipeline?
So I literally just sent off my editorial feedback for my next book, which I'm working on. So it's written, it's just on the edits at the moment. It's not been announced yet, but it's my second book with Penguin, who are publishing it. And it's another Greek myth retelling along similar lines to my other books. I absolutely loved writing it. But like you say, a lot of pressure, because now you've kind of delivered on one book. You want to make sure the next one stays to that level, and you want to make sure you keep your readers happy. So I definitely felt the pressure, but I also loved writing it. So I'm really excited to announce it as soon as I'm allowed to.
And here's coordinator founder Jodie Eales.
Last year was the first one. We didn't know how well it would be received. We didn't know if there would be funding for year two, but we're happy to be back. We're in even more schools with our schools programme, where we're bringing authors into the schools and even more authors as well. So there's lots going on.
And some really big names as well, because obviously you're going to be championing new authors, but you've got some very established names coming along too.
We do. And I think not only do we want to give space for those authors, but also it's still very new, Maidstone having a literary festival. So for some people who don't necessarily read some of the unknown authors, it's great for them to see a big name and then it draws their attention and they're like, okay, let's have a look at the programme, let's see what else there is. But Giles Brandreth has been a real winner this year. I think he's really widened our awareness of the festival, which has been brilliant. We can't wait to meet him. But yes, like you say, we do have some debut authors as well. So we'd really like people to have a look at the programme and don't think, oh, I don't know that author, I'm not quite sure. Just come along. The tickets are really reasonable. Just come along for a night out. It's always interesting. You'll always learn something. It's always fascinating. And if you like the sound of it, you can buy the book and you've got your new best read.
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, Giles Brandreth, what a character. I mean, I guess an awful lot of people see him on Celebrity Gogglebox, don't they? if they didn't see him on telly back in the day. But perhaps some don't realise, you know, he's an author as well. I'm still ploughing through his book on the Queen, which is just wonderful. It's so lovely.
I know. We're so delighted to have him. And like you say, he's done so many things. So there will be people of different generations which can relate to Giles. And he is one of my favourite characters on Gogglebox and always has been. So I'm particularly delighted to be able to meet him in person. And he's really excited to be coming to Maidstone, which is also a nice tick in the box for our local area.
Within Maidstone, you're able to use some fantastic venues, aren't you, for these audience with sessions. Just chat through where people are going to be.
Oh, we are. We're really, really lucky. Giles is at All Saints Church, which is on the River Medway and is beautiful. And up until a couple of years ago, I hadn't actually set foot inside the church and it's stunning. So we have got the opportunity for people to be nosy in some venues around Maidstone. Our event this Friday with Jill Hornby is at the Town Hall. And really, you can't get into the Town Hall very often unless it's Heritage Open Days or if you're part of the council where they hold some of their meetings. So again, a beautiful venue. And then, of course, Maidstone Library. They've got a new exhibition there, so we're able to use one of the upstairs rooms as well. And that's just completely stunning and adds to the atmosphere. And then everybody's favourite, Waterstones as well. So where else but to be in a bookshop itself. So we really have got a lovely mixture of venues in and around the town centre. So very lucky.
Writers have also been visiting local schools to inspire pupils and encourage reluctant readers. We've got a story up at Kent Online about LitFest. Head over to the website for more information about where to find tickets.
Kent Online News.
Hundreds of jobs are set to be created in Kent after DPD signed a deal to fill a new warehouse. The delivery firm is set to move into a facility at Panattoni Park near Sittingbourne when it's built. Follow Kent Online on socials to see a Banksy-style artwork that's appeared in Maidstone. The picture of a child carrying a fishing rod has been painted near the lake in Moat Park. It's been signed by Hendog, another artist who keeps their identity a secret. A Canterbury soldier who climbed Everest while using prosthetic legs has been shortlisted for a top award. Hari Budamagar lost his limbs in an explosion while serving in Afghanistan. He's one of three finalists in the Inspiration Award category at the Soldiering On Awards, which will be handed out later this month. And a Kent actress could be in the running to become the next Bond girl. Charlotte Kirk, who's been in The Duchess and The Reckoning, has dropped some hints about a possible appearance in the next 007 movie. Sydney Sweeney and Michelle Keegan are also among the bookies' favourites.
Kent Online Sports.
Football Now and Gillingham will be hoping to bounce back from Tuesday's defeat as they travel to Crewe Alexandra this weekend. The Gills broke their winning streak at Priestfield when they lost 1-0 to Grimsby Town, but are still top of the League Two table. Here's manager Mark Bonner.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We've obviously had a few home games on the bounce in the last week, so it seems a while since we've been away. So we'll get ourselves turned around. We haven't been able to do so much today, clearly, but we'll do a little bit tomorrow and head up the motorway and get ready for the game. So quite looking forward to playing a team who had a good run of results in recent weeks. Obviously last week, a bit of a disappointing one for them. They didn't play midweek due to the Wimbledon situation, so they've had the week to prepare for the game. So it'll be interesting to see whether that means anything different for them or what. But we'll have to be able to adjust in the game. And I think every time I've ever played Crewe over the years, you get some really similar traits sometimes in some clubs. And they'll probably be no different this time. I know a couple of their players well. They'll be a good side with the ball, no question. You won't be shocked to hear I watched quite a lot of them last year. And that's why Aaron Rowe and Elliot Nevitt arrived here a little bit. So, yeah, we've got a bit of an idea with that. And those two have got a bit of an idea maybe what might come as well. So it's helpful to try and chew their ear off and see if they can give us anything to help with what to expect and how they play, having played there before. But we want to try and be as well organised as we can be, as good with the ball as we can be, as dominant as possible. Like the last couple of games we've had more of the ball, we've just got to be as creative as we can be with it. So it's a nice challenge to try and get the balance between all of those. Ultimately, at the end of the game, we want to be 10 games in and a really good points return. And I guess the truth is we've already got that, but we want to extend it for sure.
Mark says he's doing his best to make sure the squad are moving on from the disappointing result last time out.
The key, I guess, for successful teams is if you win games, you want to go on winning and unbeaten runs and make them as long as possible. And if you lose games, you want to go on runs of losses or not winning games and make them as short as possible. So the quicker you can respond from a bad result, the better. And that does you wonders, definitely, because you like the crisis that forms in the world of football these days from one defeat can be big, from two is like big, and from three it's like the world's ending. So you're only ever two or three games from a crisis, really. So the sooner you can avoid that, or the less of them you can have in a season, the better. So we'll certainly try to reverse the result as quick as possible going into the weekend, because the benefit to that is very good, and the strength you can build as a team when you have a positive result after a negative one is very good for you, because you never get then too downhearted by defeat, because you back yourself that you're going to win the next game, and that's what we want to try and do.
Kickoff is at 3. That's all from us today and for the week. Thank you ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via The Briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk, and while you're on the website, why not check out the latest review from The Secret Drinker.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.